All right. Well, welcome back, everyone. So I had a chance to introduce myself to the folks here in the room, and there's a lot of familiar faces, which just like warms my heart beyond belief. It's just the coolest thing to sit in person again. And there's just a sweetness, real sweetness to this. So, I actually have just this level of gratitude in my heart that's just beyond the regular everyday gratitude. Didn't know there was a scale before, but it turns out there is. And a way to kind of relate to what I'm talking about that you likely can experience is just the difference between, the time where we all sat together every week and just really kind of took it, I took it for granted. Like it was just the way things were. And then all of a sudden that changed and life got really different for a while there. And now we have this super cool option of being able to be at home in your jammies or coming in, which is pretty neat. And just bear with me a little bit. I have a couple of just technical things happening for me. So I'm wearing new glasses and they're progressive glasses. So they're like very good for reading down low, and then they change as you look up. And so I like you all look different depending on which way my head is in this moment. And in addition, for those of you on Zoom, there's this camera in front of me, but the way that I see you is through my phone over here to the side, or you're behind me on this TV screen. And so anyway, it's just a little discombobulating for my nervous system. So I thought I would just name that. One of my coping tools is just to say, here it is, and then let it slide off, hopefully. So, but yeah, I'm sitting here today, and actually I could be sitting on the floor cross-legged, which is kind of the miracle of the moment for me, because in the last couple of years, and some of you likely know this already, but I've had this health challenge happen. And I basically was diagnosed with osteoporosis and just a overall I'm trying to find the right word for it that feels empowering at the same time. But basically, my body just decided to send me some pretty strong messages that I needed to take really, really good care of myself and also explore healing in the all the ways possible. And I was blessed with the Western technology miracle of two new hips last year. And that's what's letting me sit here like this. And it really is quite extraordinary compared to what my life was like for quite a while. And so everything in my life right now has that level of gratitude. It's just like this one, way up here. It's just phenomenal. And it's just the smallest things is being able to sit with my legs crossed, The other day I was out walking my dogs and my friend drove up and saw me and she was just like, oh, you're walking your dogs. And she starts crying and I start crying. It's just like, oh my, no, I am. It's amazing. So for those of you who don't know me, my name is Michelle McClatchy. And people actually call me Lotus Blossom, or Lotus for short. And I've been in Flagstaff for a super long time, 30 years. And lately I've been a little bit of a wandering gypsy. So now that I got the pass go green light. I started doing a little bit of traveling, and I've been in some really nice tropical places, and just really letting myself be where my heart calls me to be. And so that's a really fun stage in life right now. And part of that too is a new exploration of the way that I do my work or make a living. And so I've been a counselor for a really long time, and I specialize in teaching people about mindfulness and meditation, and just really help people to wake up and relate to life in a new way, you know, and heal their hearts and minds. And so I'm still doing that work, but I'm also offering retreats. And my newest passion, and I'm super excited about, is teaching people or facilitating breathwork experiences. And I've come to realize through my own health challenges that meditation alone and isn't the fix for everything. Maybe you guys have discovered that in your lives too. I don't know. it's up there in amazing practices, but there's something about the way that we do life, where oftentimes we're storing our difficult experiences inside of our body. And if we don't move that in a healthy way, it can end up causing a lot of health issues. And maybe it's mental health, but depression or anxiety or physical challenges. And I really believe, you know, I got dealt a certain hand of cards that got me where I am right now. And some of those cards were ones that I chose. And there was a fair amount of neglect of taking care of myself. And I always thought I had more time, or it wasn't a big deal, or, you know, that thing that we do, and that river in Egypt, denial, you know. And so one of the things that I did is I was able to just got used to this like underlying anxiety inside of me. And I just learned to live with it. This kind of like, oh, this is just how I always feel. And it turns out that, you know, that can catch up to you. And this is just my belief that it ate away at the soft tissues of my body. So, and so I just share all that with you. As I was talking about the breathwork piece, so that's a way to be able to help us to shift and move energy. And then the last thing that I'm really excited about is doing some art therapy, collage work as a way to help people with self-expression. And so you're welcome to come and find me. I'll have some workshops in Flagstaff, and my website's Many Mindful Moments if you are curious about that. And so I just thought for a minute, I was reflecting a little bit about when I first started to meditate. And perhaps in this moment, you may have recalled the time when you first started to meditate. What those early times might have been like for you. And I'm just curious to hear if you had like a word or two that you would say that would describe what your early time with meditation felt like. So I'm imagining that we all might be experiencing a sense of commonality right now. If it wasn't when we first started meditating, then somewhere along the way we've experienced these same things. And this is what I was remembering too. You know, it begins with this little spark somewhere along the way. Somebody whispers in our ear and says, "Meditation, meditation." And we're like, "What? What's that?" Maybe, I don't know. And then somehow there's that moment where when we actually sit down and close our eyes, and then it begins. And the love affair begins with its highs and lows. And oftentimes it begins with just this realization of just how chaotic our minds really are or can be, because we never learned how to have a trained and healthy mind. And, you know, just here in Flagstaff, it's winter. And so there's icy roads. And I was just thinking the other day about how when you're driving on the ice and you lose control of the car, the instinct is to grab on the steering wheel and correct or slam on the brakes. Not recommended. What you need to do is actually let go. And that's how the car like automatically corrects itself. And that's a little bit of like what this meditation practice is, right? It's this teaching of letting go. And it begins by just learning how to observe our mind, observe the chaos. And along the way, we realize like, oh, I'm not the only one. Oh, thank goodness. There's other people who go through this too. And then there's, you know, just this maturing that happens as we start to observe and understand the connection between where we come from and our family and the, you know, what our parents learned and their parents learned and their parents learned, and that, you know, we just absorbed all of that as young children and began to, this belief process about life, and we picked it up from our family or our culture. And then the story goes on from there, but we begin to notice like, oh, here's this belief, I'm not good enough. And when that thought comes along, I feel this devastating weight and my gut hurts and I feel afraid and I choose to avoid social situations, or I choose to not go talk to that person or take that risk because I don't believe in myself, right? And maybe we saw all of this before and just thought like that's how it is. But through the meditation practice, we begin to understand that it's just a story, right? That we can ultimately step back from, observe, and then begin to shift the story over time, relate to it with more wisdom and grace. And along the lines of that, you know, I think about this situation with my hips, and you know, I basically, I used to be a very avid outdoors woman. And so I would rock climb and mountain bike and just be out there all the time. And I gradually had to start letting that go. And I just was not physically able to go do those things. And thanks to this practice, I was able to, for the most part, generally speaking, have a sense of equanimity about it. Just like, okay, that's not available to me. Well, what is available to me? And there's so much. There's so much more in life. And I was able, luckily, thankfully, to find joy and happiness in other experiences. But I'm also just reminded of the teaching that if we're always seeking something outside of us to be happy, we're never going to be satisfied, right? And that's really like the first noble truth is that, you know, life is inherently unsatisfying. One of my favorite teachers, he has this saying, he quotes another teacher in his talks, and he talks about how the leading cause of old age, sickness, and death is being born. And so we come to these teachings and we realize like, oh, okay, this is actually the way things work versus the bill of goods that we're sold, at least in this culture, that says, actually, if you get this job and you get or with that person, you know, that's going to make you happy. And you're supposed to be happy all the time in life. And that's how it goes. And if you're not, and you're failing, you're doing something wrong, or there's something wrong with you. So And so we get to start to unravel all of this misdirection and start to get underneath it and start to observe it with just an understanding that it's not necessarily the truth. And then just with a little bit more patience and ease. So Brian Lesage, he says, and it used to drive me crazy when I would sit with him years ago in the past, that as the next thing comes along in your meditation practice or in your life that's troubling for you, that a way to respond is to just say, oh, how interesting. or this too. Ah, oh, this too. Ah, oh, this too. And I was sitting there like, but what's the answer? Make it go away. Make it stop. But that is the answer, right? It's just like, wow, how interesting that there's this whole movie storyline going on inside of me. And there it is again, or here's another form of it, or, you know, then we get to kind of step back and have a little bit of a different way of watching. And then a kind of an understanding of where it comes from, right? Like so that's like the first noble truth. And then the second noble truth that the Buddha talked about was, where's the cause of that, you know, that suffering that we experience. And, you know, it's the clinging on to like, oh, it's supposed to be this way, or it's not supposed to be this way. and there's such a richness to that part of the teaching, but, you know, we basically, we make ourselves sick through these beliefs, and then we desperately want to feel better. And so what do? We turn towards whatever we think it's going to make us feel better. And there's so much addiction, as you all know, in our own lives and in our culture, and there's an endless array of things to be addicted to. You know, there's the big ones, and of course, which is just so heartbreaking, you know, the really serious drugs and alcohol and sex addiction and then there's, you know, just TV and movies and the internet and shopping and yes, the phone. It holds all of the answers we could ever need, and it's a tool that's poisoning us. And so addiction's a tough one, you know, it's really challenging to transform. A meditation is one path, one way to be able to touch into that and to see the pattern with a more benevolent gaze. And along with that, what helps with that, just like I was saying in the loving kindness practice, is that hand on the heart, a hand on the belly. It's just like, okay, can I bring compassion to myself? Can I bring some understanding or forgiveness to this pattern that's here, to the shame and guilt and doubt that I'm experiencing? And so we get to open our hearts and begin to learn how to love ourselves, love the imperfections, love the habits and the ways that we let ourselves down or hurt other people or ourselves. Or, you know, there's room for us to be all this human frailty, and we create the room with our hearts. And that's the place, the fertile ground of where we can really truly heal, you know, because it's the mind that wants to judge and make sure that we know how terrible we are, right? And so that's merely, you know, a factor of an untrained mind. It's like, oh, judging. Oh, there it is again, judging. Oh, now I'm judging myself for judging. Okay, that's all right. And then, we have this this third noble truth of the knowing that there's a cessation to the suffering, that it doesn't have to be that way forever, right? And wow, what a really but it's not a linear process, right? It's not like you just like, okay, if I do this, this, and this, then it's going to stop and end, you know. But and it really, it's ongoing, and that's okay, right? That's all right. That's we can bring like a little bit of acceptance and willingness to that. And then with the fourth noble truth, there's a path. And there's a way. And in some Native American traditions, they talk about the beauty way. And it's another orientation to how we do life. But it, for me as an outdoors person, I'm like, oh my gosh, there's a guidebook. Oh, awesome. Okay. Maybe I can study that and I can follow the path, follow the way. And so we begin to gather these tools, right? And it's not like a one size fits all to everybody, which I think is actually really helpful. I was really grateful when I realized that for myself, that sometimes this practice is the thing that's calling and relevant in the situation. And sometimes it's something really different. And there's all kinds of different ways to get there, wherever it is that we're going. Oh, that's right. We're trying to wake up and stay awake. And so one of my favorite practices, and we can even do it all together right now, is just arriving in this present moment. So just opening our senses to what's here right now. In this moment, and we do that through our body. We do that through our overall awareness. Like for me, I can feel how tall the roof is in this building. I wish I could show you on the screen right now, but the ceiling is like 30 feet tall, maybe more. And you can feel that, right? To the top of your head, you can actually feel how far the rooftop is. Just dropping into the present moment, arriving in the here and now. It's available to us no matter what situation is happening in every moment of the rest of our lives. We get to arrive again and again. A friend of mine, I remember so clearly, we were kayaking on the river and it was just exquisite, beautiful moment, perfect lighting. And he says, Lotus, how's this moment? And I was like, that's pretty good. And then a minute later, he goes, Lotus, how's this moment? I was like, oh, it's pretty good. And so that's just one of the little practices I have in my back pocket. How's this moment? You know, knowing that the answer might not always be it's pretty good, but at least we're aware of what the moment is. And then in the awareness, there's this, almost natural quality of that loving kindness practice that steps in. Like, oh my gosh, my heart is beating so fast. That's how I felt when I sat here and there's like two microphones and a camera. I was just, oh my goodness, discombobulated is how this moment is. Okay. That's all right. You know, okay. And we learn how to have wisdom with our mind and our relationships and our choices in life. And as we do this, as we integrate all of these different practices into our way of being, there becomes like a sense of spaciousness. And maybe you can relate to that, those of you who have practiced for a while. Almost kind of like when you're in your meditation practice and there's just a period of time where there's nothing arising. And, we can definitely be grasping after that. So as soon as you notice that nothing's arising, it's just like, oh, and then poof, it's gone. But there can be the spaciousness that begins to arise in our lives, a little bit more room. One of my favorite quotes by Viktor Frankl is between stimulus and response is a space. And it's in that space that we have the freedom to choose. And this is an area of life right now that I'm really fascinated by because it's kind of like almost like the step beyond the constant effort to heal ourselves and to deal with the crazy mind, so to speak. It's almost like the spaciousness is creating the fertile ground for something new to grow. And perhaps a place of creation in our lives. And it's like, what would life be like if we had all learned to meditate when we were six? Or we had all learned how to process our feelings in the moment and release them and move on. And we didn't have so much clinging to do. What would that be like? When you think about a six-year-old and all they do is create, all they do is play, and they're in their imagination, and they love to engage with other kids, and they love to be outside in nature. And there's a pureness and a simplicity of that that I believe that we're all coming back to with this practice. So my encouragement tonight as I was thinking about this Dharma talk was using our minds, letting our minds be allies and friends beyond the loving kindness practice, but in our lives in general, by recognizing the tremendous power and potential that they offer to us through creativity. And so, for instance, every day we can wake up and say, oh my gosh, you know what? My intention today is to try to be more present. And right there in that moment, a seed is planted in the spaciousness. And what can grow from that? What can grow from that? More presence. Our intentions can unfold and come to life. And along with that, we can visualize what we want to have happen. We can see ourselves healing, growing, expanding in new ways. And why not give ourselves permission to do that? So, one of my favorite authors, whose last name I always, it's like 50-50 if you're going to get it right. And I'm pretty darn sure it's Eckhart Tolle. No confirmation. But he wrote a book called The New Earth. And he speaks about many of the practices from this tradition. And he offers a guidance to us to actually imagine that our earth could be different, that there's room for new possibilities for the way that humanity functions and interacts with the earth and with each other. And where did that come from him? It was just an idea, right? It came to him, this vision of a new earth, and it can come to us too. So that's my encouragement to all of you, is to allow yourself the potential of seeing a new possibility for your life, a new story that in the spaciousness of the field that you've been tending, something really beautiful can grow. And what do you want to grow there? What do you want? What do you want? What is your heart's longing? So Eckhart, bless your heart, I can't say your last name. He says that the present moment is the field on which the game of life happens. And then Don Miguel Ruiz, some of you might know, he wrote the Four Agreements. He says that every human is an artist. And the dream of your life is to make beautiful art. And so I'll just close the talk with that offering of just maybe closing your eyes, dropping into this moment, and imagining yourself as an artist who has this life to create something beautiful and sweet, perhaps even a masterpiece. Well, thank you all so much for your kind attention. So good to see you. So good to see my friends here online. Bless you.
1 Thank you for listening. To learn how you can support the teachers and Dharma Seed, please visit dharmaseed.org/donate.